I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03 on this Wednesday, the 6th of August. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for being here on the WBBM Noon Business Hour today. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. ESPN and the NFL reaching a tentative deal, giving ESPN control of NFL Network, Red Zone, and other key media properties. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, a wave of key earnings rolling in today. Major players in media, rideshare, and fast food reporting quarterly results, offering a snapshot of consumer trends. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter, online at horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here. A lot to get to with these reports. Let's start with Disney. We'll talk about the ESPN NFL side in our next segment, but Disney topping earnings expectations, streaming and parks kind of offsetting weak television numbers. What's driving the results here for Disney?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think Wall Street's continuing to focus on the cord cutting that's going on their linear TV aspects, and that's kind of weighing the stock down. Disney had been a decent performer over the last 12 months. So I think there was a little air underneath the stock too. And in this environment where if you're coming out with earnings that just aren't hitting on all cylinders and where you have a little bit of a black eye, and in this case with Disney, it's a linear, you get a market that is selling off the stock today. But I think their streaming business continues to improve, and their parks business was solid. I think their film business is going to be pretty decent too with some of the films that they have out there. So I kind of think it's going to be a fairly short-lived pullback, but we'll see.
All right, so from Mickey Mouse over to Ronald McDonald now, fast food and the Jane posting way better than expected earnings, really strong same-store sales jump in nearly 2 years. What do you take away from the McDonald's numbers here today, Chuck?
It was a nice quarter, and the market's movement today, it's up a little over 3% as we speak, kind of indicates it was a good number. I think people were especially happy with kind of their revenue numbers here, especially same-store sales. McDonald's still conceded that the lower-income diner is still challenged, and they're still challenged on that area, and they're trying to figure out some ways maybe to improve business for that segment or to get better, more business from that segment. But all in all, it was a stock that had been kind of a little lazy this year and really over the last 12 months. And so I think this was better than expected, and the stock price reflects that right now.
And finally, Chuck, we head over to rideshare giant Uber, also posting some solid results today. What's driving the momentum for Uber in your eyes?
Yeah, their platform is doing quite well. They're getting more users. They're really staking a claim in autonomous driving going forward with a lot of different deals. Their bookings were solid. Their double-digit revenue growth. So all in all, it was real nice quarter for Uber. Now, somebody may go, well, Jesus, stock's down 1%. Well, yeah, it is. But, I mean, Uber this year-to-date's up 46%. So it's one of those where, kind of the buy the rumor, sell the news, so to speak. And again, it was a solid quarter for Uber. Their clients are still in pretty good shape. And all in all, I think you'll see a stock continue to do pretty well here after today's pullback.
All right, Chuck, quickly we talk about entertainment, food, and rideshare. Just in your eyes, what do the results say kind of about the health of the consumer overall?
I think, it's segmented here pretty clearly. I think, the middle and the upper income levels for consumers are doing okay. As you start going down the chain a little bit, it starts to see some stress. And you saw that in McDonald's comments. And I think you're seeing that in some of the cord cutting that's going on linear TVs as well. So I think overall, consumer is okay, but there are certain stratas there where they are feeling it a little bit more than others. And those companies that really depend on that lower income consumer probably are going to find their earnings a bit challenged here in this quarter, in the second half of this year.
All right, lots of numbers, great insight as always. Thanks so much. That's Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter, online at horizoninvestment.com. Coming up, ESPN and the NFL striking a preliminary deal for media assets, including the NFL Network.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The NFL and ESPN reaching a preliminary deal for the NFL Network, Red Zone, and more. Pending final negotiations, owner approval, and regulatory review. With us now to discuss is Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group. Tim, thanks for joining us. All right, yesterday we talked about streaming with Fox and the NFL implications there. Now we've got this mega deal with the NFL and ESPN. Lots to unpack for football fans like myself. Break it down for us. What should fans know here as we head into a new season?
Yeah, nice to talk to you again. The deal really is indicative of just the NFL's power and all of this stuff, right? So Fox and ESPN trying to get all their juicy news out there. And frankly, this is also related to ESPN's long-awaited reveal of their new direct-to-consumer streaming product, which is now set to debut in about 2 weeks, later in August, conveniently timed for the beginning of college football and NFL football again, right? So that's sort of the bigger issue at play, right? So football driving a lot of these things. Now, but specifically for this deal between ESPN and the NFL, this has been many years in the making and a long history, a long arc. There's a book for all of this about how the NFL and ESPN came to better relate with each other over the years. But it seems, to your point, though, earlier, with some regulatory issues to be solved, that this is the crown jewel, I guess, right now, what's going on a lot in media and sports, where ownership is really starting to take place, where a league and or a programmer are starting to truly be co-investors in things. And in this case, ESPN is giving up 10% of its ownership. So between Hearst and Disney, now the NFL has a 10% ownership stake in ESPN. That's going to be a very significant shift. But what ESPN is getting is something that they have long desired to have, which is some of the NFL's media assets. They've been trying to shop NFL Network for some time now. ESPN will now program that exclusively. Red Zone Channel, which is the highlights package that cable subscribers get and have love simply to watch all the action at the in the scoring and that kind of stuff, will also now be distributed by ESPN, not necessarily programmed by ESPN. NFL will still do that, but ESPN will be getting the rights to the quote-unquote Red Zone name, and the implication there is that the idea of Red Zone may be now applied by ESPN to other sports and other leagues. So those are pretty tantalizingly attractive assets to somebody like ESPN who's got the programming chops. And for the NFL, it kind of ensures that they're going to get some really favorable coverage as the ESPN relationship continues to, I think it's going to be a question mark in terms of how journalistically objective ESPN will be when it comes to the NFL, since they're now part of the ownership group. But it's a very interesting deepening of the relationship, shall we say.
And Tim, quickly, I want to touch on especially the Red Zone aspect. And, you know, we've heard a lot of rumbling, and I've seen a lot of it on social media, too, of, you know, the Red Zone is sacred for football fans during the season, and concerns of, you know, am I going to see Stephen A. Smith or Pat McAfee now, you know, appearing on Red Zone? I mean, should viewers of ESPN and its products, Red Zone as well, NFL Network, whether that's, you know, Good Morning Football, shows like that, should we expect to see any difference in programming moving forward?
Yeah, I think ESPN will certainly more aggressively program NFL Network. I think you'll see more sports kind of shifted over there as well, like bowl games and that kind of stuff. I think NFL's retaining the programming of it's going to be sacrosanct. But I do think you're going to see ESPN leverage the brand into other things outside of that. So I think Yes, the red zone is pretty much off limits in terms of change, but I think ESPN is going to try to do stuff elsewhere with that branding.
It's going to be fascinating to watch, that's for sure. Thanks so much. Tim Hamblin, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group. Up next, riders of public transit in the Chicago area likely facing fare hikes.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, with an over $700 million funding gap looming, Chicago area transit agencies warning fare hikes are likely. Let's welcome in Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University. Joe, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. We've been reporting on it now for quite some time, but things not looking great for local transit. Where do things stand here in your eyes, and what should riders know?
Yeah, well, pressure is indeed building, and we know there's going to be a special session in Springfield, but the summer session didn't yield a lot of, safe bets of funding that's going to help close the gap. So it's going to be a stressful autumn. I think things, though, awareness is growing that, we're going to have to think big about solving this problem, and unfortunately, fare increases may be part of the mix.
So if the state legislature, Joe, fails to provide any additional funding, obviously we've talked about the fare increases, what will happen to the future of public transit in the state?
You know, it's really tough. I mean, the 771 funding gap is bigger than any one funding stream can solve, so we're going to need multiple sources. But we do know that particularly a thinning of schedules on lesser used routes, reduced off-peak service, painful cuts to some of the CTA bus lines, metro lines. So it would be across the board. And we've known from past sort of doomsday budgets, so when these things happen, the public really reacts. So it's going to be tough to watch as these scenarios get put forth. So legislators just under enormous pressure, but there's still some pushback in Springfield of thinking that our agencies haven't done enough to integrate and become better in exchange for more funding.
You mentioned the public pushback here, Joe, and obviously I don't think anyone's going to be, celebrating fare hikes. But we've also heard the possibility of service cuts being on the table. How do those factor in, and is that maybe a route that some of these agencies may go to avoid maybe, skyrocketing fares?
Oh, that's exactly right. You do look at ridership, and it's down, post-pandemic, and we're seeing particularly rail ridership, bus ridership's bounce back a little bit faster. And it's hard to make cuts because you lose riders, and now we're seeing people really value frequency. We have fewer of those 9-to-5 downtown commuters, so, the once-an-hour all-stop trains don't cut it anymore for a lot of people. So we have to make the system run differently with less rush hour service. That's going to need more funding. But certainly, if we don't reach that 771 target, the funding target, we're going to need the thin schedules just to meet the budget. And we're still waiting for details on exactly where that would be.
It's going to be fascinating and a little nerve-wracking to follow, that's for sure. Thanks so much. Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services, director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, we identify the financial documents you should always shred.
I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. Stocks trending higher today. And joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy and Silvest. Paul, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. I want to start here on the trade front. President Trump slapping an additional tariff on India over Russian oil ties. How is that factoring into the mix here when we look at the markets?
I don't think it really is. I mean, when we take a look at the tariffs, it's almost every other day, every third day, we get tariff announcements. The deal has been agreed to. We're going to do additional tariffs. And I don't think the markets, I think, have learned from early April that this is all movable targets and this can change. So what we really are waiting for is the impact on prices or on consumers to those tariffs. And we haven't really seen it. We saw a little bit in the CPI, PPI number last month. We should get more next week when those numbers are released. But I think investors are really looking through the tariffs, and it's more, I guess, at this point, talk than it is action and something that's showing up in a lot of the economic data.
Yeah, Paul, you know, we started the show by talking about some new results and good numbers here in the heart of earnings season. You know, we touched on some of the major players. Your takeaway from some of the numbers that we're seeing here as we roll through 2025?
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. When you take a look at the technology sector, the big tech names, they all have done extremely well. They continue to expand their capital expenditures, and that, I think, is driving a lot of the economic growth that we're seeing. When you drill down in some of the other parts of the market, so energy, industrials, materials, it's a little bit more of a mixed bag. One of the things that we are looking at is those that are a little bit more closer, a little closer to the consumer. So like McDonald's today reported very good earnings. So that tells us, at least in general, the consumer's doing okay. So we're looking at a lot of the other consumer facing or those that where the consumer is greatly involved to see how those earnings are doing. We'll get a little bit more this week and next week. Retail sales will be a key number to watch to see how the consumer is holding up. And then I think it'll give us a better idea of the economic landscape. But overall, earnings have been generally in line with expectations. And that is, I think, part of the reason why we're seeing a relatively strong market.
You know, Paul, you know, you mentioned tech, and we're expecting an announcement today by Apple about $100 billion investment in manufacturing here in the U.S., bringing the total U.S. investment to about $600 billion over the next few years. Your thoughts on that investment and how that could maybe impact the markets here moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it'll have a bigger impact certainly on Apple and how that comes to fruition. And what is the focus for Apple? They have been one of the key players in the negotiations with China as far as the tariffs go. So we'll be watching to see what is it that they're looking to bring back on shore, or is it an expansion of current lines for Apple? So I think it's not going to be necessarily a big impact for the economy. It's going to be a lot more Apple specific. So we'll be taking a look at what they have to say and what they're going to be doing here in the United States to determine how much of an impact we'll see in Apple stock over the next couple of years.
All right, and Paul, finally, a big picture here heading into the back half of 2025. Curious your thoughts on the market overall and any areas you may be thinking are poised for a strong performance, or maybe some areas that are set to disappoint here.
Yeah, I think technology certainly is an area that everybody has piled into. So it's actually one that we are kind of fading at this point, and maybe not as enthusiastic as the rest of the investment community. We're looking at those areas that have been a little bit neglected. So some of the industrials, some of the basic materials, even healthcare. It's come under fire with Trump, but I think that's an area that's very inexpensive here. And bonds, I think, are going to be okay. They're up about 4% year to date, and I think they will continue to do well. So maybe outside the equity area, there's a lot more interesting parts to be looking at, especially outside of tech.
That is Paul Nolte. Paul, thanks so much. Paul is Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy and Silvest. Great stuff as always. Up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, the financial documents you should take care to destroy.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is Personal Finance Wednesday. Old financial documents can pose identity theft risks. Knowing what to keep and what to shred can help safeguard your privacy and declutter your home. Joining us now with some key advice is Jerry Irvine, CEO of Prescient Solutions and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force. Jerry, thanks so much for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour today. All right, so when we talk financial documents, and which ones we want to hold on to, which we want to shred, where do you go first here in terms of maybe the shredding department?
Yeah, the most important things, obviously, are your tax statements, bank statements, and credit card statements. Those have personally identifiable information that are going to allow hackers to get into your financial information. So those are the things that you want to shred. And it's usually 731, right? 7 years for anything going to the federal government, 3 years for any type of banking type of information, and 1 year for other types of information that may be important for you to use. But the rule of thumb, quite honestly, is get it, review it, and shred it. First put it into an encrypted document and back it up on your PC or up in the cloud in an encrypted area. If you don't have it in paper, hackers can't dumpster dive your area. They can't get it from your desktop. They can't get it from your office. So the best thing to do is make it electronic, encrypt it, and then store it so that you have access to it.
So, Jerry, you know, big picture here, why is it that some of those documents pose such a big risk when you talk about identity theft and the financial aspect?
It's real easy to get those documents. Hackers are still dumpster diving. They're still going into your garbage and grabbing information, especially if you have a personal office or a home office. And that information generally includes your name, address, phone number, social security numbers, account numbers. And those are the things that make it easy for hackers to gain access to you.
When we talk about shredding here, Jerry, you know, everyone kind of has concerns about how to do things safely. When you talk about the shredding, whether you do that at home or professionally, any tips to ensure that whatever you are shredding is really being, you know, kind of put away forever and away from these hackers?
Absolutely. Don't buy a cheap shredder. Cheap shredders only shred in one direction, and they can be easily, documents can be easily put back together. You see things on these spy movies and other things, and quite honestly, they're true. You need to get the shredders that will shred in multiple directions so that it's coming out like little squares, as opposed to just buying a cheap shredder that will just, you know, put it right through the system.
Jerry, I also want to touch on, you know, alternatives electronically here for storing financial records and documents. Where do you go there in terms of keeping those safe and away from those who may want to do bad things with your information?
So there are backup applications for your PC and for your, you know, web-based documents. And those are the easiest way to make sure you have a full backup of all your systems. Microsoft's operating system has an encryption program called BitLocker. It's top of the line 256K triple des encryption that has yet to be proven to be hacked by the NSA yet. Whether or not it has is still up for, you know, conversation. But BitLocker or other types of applications like that encrypt your PC, encrypt your phone, and then back it up to the net so that you have access to it should anything happen to your home or personal device.
Really helpful stuff here to protect your financial future. Thanks so much. That's Jerry Irvine, CEO of Prescient Solutions, member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, mortgage rates continue to drop.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Mortgage rates have hit their lowest level since 2025. Joining us now to discuss what it means for home buyers and sellers is Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, let's start with these mortgage rates dipping and exactly what is causing the drop here.
I think that's an interesting question. I think the, you know, rates coming down has been just the pressure that everybody's been getting to doing this and trying to, you know, stimulate some of the affordable housing and such. So, you know, I think that is really driven right now by all the pressure that the market has been getting.
Drew, we've talked about the fact that the housing market has certainly seen better days. But when we talk about these lower rates and the possibility of that maybe triggering a bit of a rebound here, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously lowering the rates helps out with the, you know, lower monthly payments. It expands the purchasing power for these buyers. You know, they can afford some more houses. It's going to probably draw some more buyers out there, which will probably then, you know, increase the surge of people looking at houses. So maybe the house prices will start to come back again. So, maybe there will even be some more sellers that will enter the market as well as these, interest rates decline.
So, Drew, on the other side of that, current homeowners may be hearing the news and maybe looking at their own options. When you talk about refinancing at today's lower rates, is that a good move? Is that something we may see more homeowners opt to do?
I think so. I think those folks that, you know, locked in at that 7 and above number are finally seeing that there's enough of a spread and to make it worthwhile that they can refinance and capitalize on some of these lower interest rates and lower their payments and maybe allow themselves to do some home improvements and some other things that they might want to do around the house.
Yeah, and finally, when we look at these mortgage rates and their low numbers here, Drew, is this something that we can maybe expect to last? You know, if you've got maybe people who are wanting to make a move but are sitting on the sidelines, maybe not sure if now's the time, and maybe these will stick around, or maybe they want to act fast. How long do you believe that these low rates may last?
It's always the crystal ball question is how long, right? So I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if you want to get in before the school year starts and you know, you have an opportunity, I think it's really best to talk to, you know, your financial folks, make sure you can get qualified, you know, check out your goals and what you're trying to do, because there's no time better than the current.
Great stuff. Drew Wishover, thanks so much. Drew is founder and owner of Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Don't forget, if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com as well as on the Odyssey app.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.